16 Minutes of Care is a podcast based on the CARE principles, a strategic framework that reveals how brands create impact by caring and, as a result, grow their business. In each episode, Isabel welcomes a company executive who explains how CARE has helped their business grow successfully and sustainably.
Lundbeck Pharmaceuticals make brain health medication. They are one of the few companies in the world who exclusively focus on brain diseases. Brain diseases ranging from migraine to depression or to, for instance, Parkinson's disease. The roots of the company are in Denmark, but today more than 5,400 people work in 50 countries. I am very pleased to have Lundbeck's CEO, Deborah Dunsire, here with me today in 16 Minutes of Care. Welcome, Deborah.
Thank you, Isabel. It's great to be here.
It's amazing that you are here. Let me start with Lundbeck's company purpose, because you have a beautiful purpose. It says, "We are tirelessly dedicated to restoring brain health so every person can be at their best." What is the situation today with people's brain health, and what can we do to be at our best?
There are so many impacts on brain health today, from mental diseases and mental ill health, particularly exaggerated by COVID and the isolation of COVID. So we're seeing record rates of depression, particularly among youth. Other diseases like Alzheimer's disease and Parkinson's disease are diseases affecting the elderly, but they're growing as our populations age. So there are so many different brain health disorders that need to be addressed for people to be able to function at their best and to relate to their family. And it's not just the absence of illness, it's the ability to thrive and be able to enjoy life and participate fully.
I understand. And a lot of statistics show indeed that youngsters have a lot of issues today, so we'll talk a little bit later about that. I would like to dive straight into care for people, because this is the subject particularly of this podcast. It's very normal today in society, when you have physical issues, to go to the doctor, to talk about this to your family or to your colleagues. Mental illnesses, mental issues might be a little bit different. What is the situation in your experience? Do we already openly talk about mental health issues?
Unfortunately, mental health issues have had a strong stigma really around the world. And I think things are changing. It is becoming a little bit more acceptable to speak about things like depression or bipolar. But there's still, in many parts of the world, that stigma. There's also, in many parts of the world, an unequal access to care. So insurances, it's much easier to get treatment for a physical disorder than mental ill health. What's great in terms of changing stigma are people who do speak out. So I think about Naomi Osaka, who spoke about her challenges with mental illness, depression in her, and anxiety in her case, and that changes the dialogue in society. The other thing we can do is advocate with policymakers to ensure that there is equal parity of care and that these diseases are recognized and treated.
Mm-hmm. One of the interesting things that I read, and I would like to talk about care for people and care for your employees, is that at Lundbeck you can come and work with certain mental health issues. Can you explain a little bit how that works?
Well, I think we want every brain in the game, right? We want people to be able to bring all of who they are, all their experiences, to the workplace. And we believe in a diverse an inclusive workplace, because companies that can bring in diverse talents can thrive and perform better. And so that means across all aspects of diversity, including neurodiversity. So we do have employees who have different conditions, some with neurological conditions like Parkinson's disease, where we can make accommodations for some of the physical effects, but also people who are experiencing depression, we have very easy access to get counseling. Managers are trained to be able to hear an employee when they're expressing stress or impacts on their mental health, and then put them in touch with resources that we have available to help them with their mental health. And often we can have people go through an episode of illness and come back to being a thriving employee, and that's our goal.
So you really set an example at Lundbeck to give these people really a job and an opportunity to be themselves and come with their whole self to work.
Yeah, what I've always found is that when people don't talk to their employer about what is truly going on with their health, mental or physical, it can create a barrier where the employer is often wondering why the employee is not performing as they once were. And that can result in exiting from the organization. Whereas if there is the opportunity for dialogue, that situation can often be remedied. And a great employee can be given help and return to being that fully functional, great employee.
But in order to have this dialogue, you need to have a very open culture, I suppose, at Lundbeck. Is that something the company works actively on?
Yes. I think that without actively working on it, we can, if we simply say we're a neurodiverse workplace without backing it up, first of all, managers don't really know what to do. So we do some training to help managers understand how they hear from an employee and then to connect them with resources in the company, in either our human resources or our health, safety and environment, our ombudsman, so that people and managers can get the help they need to navigate an episode of mental ill health for an employee.
Mm, that's interesting. I would like to dive a little bit deeper into the CARE strategic framework. So it's not just about care for people or the planet. It's also about four shifts in the way we work. Mm-hmm. CARE stands for collaboration, for agility, reliability and empathy. Let's start with collaboration. We did a benchmark study in Belgium on 2,000 employees. And the overall score is only 53%. But when we look specifically at internal collaboration, the score is only 46%. So only 46% of people say we do collaborate better. Is that something, you say it's surprising, is that something that you recognize, or do you believe that at Lundbeck you do it better?
Well, I hope we do it better. Our recent employee survey, which we conduct every year, and then with pulse surveys in between, suggests that that is an aspect of work that people thoroughly enjoy. And, you know, our business in creating new medicines, it demands so many different skill sets that collaboration is a requirement across different skill sets. So people have to work in teams to be able to bring those skill sets together. And it is enjoyable. Of course, it comes with challenges. And of course, there's always room for improvement. We're never done. Our latest survey would suggest that collaboration scores high, partly because it's a requirement for us to get our work done.
Mm-hmm. Could you give any suggestions how you collaborate better internally? In such a big organization with so many countries, do you have examples of how you do it that others could do as well?
I think there's so many different ways of collaborating, and actually I think one of the ways that has worked for us that we practiced, I guess, through COVID was the use of hybrid meetings and virtual to be more inclusive of employees in other places, that we all learned to do that better. So we're much better at managing, for instance, hybrid meetings, and that takes a lot of discipline, so that all voices can be heard, and it's not just the people in the room who are doing most of the talking. And I've seen actually improvement over time as we've practiced that skill, and it really does allow us to bring in, for instance, our research site on the west coast of the US, there's a 9-hour time difference. We've found ways to time our meetings so that we can have our researchers here and in La Jolla talk together, work together for a period of time, and then go back out to their, you know, the sort of sun never sets on that. So there's some very good aspects of that, and we've used technology to improve collaboration around the globe as one example.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. Let's move over to agility. In the pharmaceutical world, in average, it takes about 15 years before medication gets really approved to go to market. So you work with very long processes of product development and testing. That's the opposite of agility. Still, how do you keep your business agile?
Well, I think that even within the product development cycle, decisions are being made all the time. And so, for instance, in the production of a biological medicine, you can suddenly find that the production system, because it's in live cells, can have a changed ability to produce, and you have to react very quickly to problem solve. So that can be a very agile process. In recent times, again, COVID, in our supply chain, normally we have production plans and batches planned out a long time in advance. We've had to be much more agile because sometimes supply was not available for a particular medicine that we would be producing. So we've had to manually change the plans to be able to produce something else. So within all of those processes
it's possible to be
agile, but the overall development of a drug is a very, very long and very regimented process.
Which makes sense totally, of course. Within agility, for me, diversity and inclusion is also an important part. It's about adapting companies to how society is looking. It's something very personal for you. You're a strong believer and a vocal about diversity, the importance of diversity and inclusion. I specifically came to Denmark because I believe that the Nordic countries are really ahead of the rest of Europe and maybe the rest of the world in terms of diversity and inclusion. Still, only in Nordic countries, only between 7 and 12% of CEOs of companies are women.
Correct.
So you're amongst the rare female CEOs of big companies. What is, in your perspective, the reason for that?
Everywhere that we see difference, there's the possibility for bias, and that exists in the Nordic countries too. And certainly, many of the Nordic countries have made really good progress, but there does still exist an unconscious bias. And I think when decisions of promotion are made, we really have to be very active in and disciplined in our thinking about, have we really considered a diverse slate of candidates? Have we really considered people who don't look or think like ourselves? And that challenge exists. I've worked in South Africa, in Switzerland, in the US, in multiple places, and now in Denmark. And unconscious bias is still a major factor. Interestingly, on the social support side of things, the Nordic countries have been for many decades further ahead in supporting parental leave, but it was mainly for mothers. Recently, the Danish Parliament has split the parental leave, so that there's still a year of parental leave, but it needs to be split between the
male and female,
yes. Or the two spouses, because same-sex families are also recognized within it. And I think that's actually positive, because I do think that it is wonderful to have young children cared for in those early months by their parents, so phenomenal support for families. But if that all falls on one gender or one spouse, that person will have less work experience because they've been out of the workplace. So equalizing the sharing of parental leave, I think, is a great positive for the potential for women to also be advancing in the workplace. Mm.
We are living today in challenging times. I think that's the least we can say. Is leadership changing? Is maybe a more female touch of leadership the solution for the challenges we are facing?
I think that in today's world, because there is so much change and a need for agility and to respond to change, any rigid hierarchical structure will not be a positive. Those are positive in things like the military, but in a business world where things are changing constantly, I think that that need for inclusive leadership and for listening throughout the organization, up and down in the hierarchy, is critical to being able to sense what is going on and the rate of change in the environment. And typically the tradition of female leadership, that more inclusive, more shared leadership, I think is positive to encourage that sensing and listening across all areas of the company.
Mm. Yes. We are almost at the end already of the first episode. Yes, it's going very fast. Last question, Deborah. If you look at care for people, it can be your employees, it could be your clients, it could be your stakeholders. What tips could you share with our viewers and listeners from your experience, from Lundberg, that anybody can apply as well?
I think in caring for people, the most important thing is to think about their needs, what it is that they need to be successful. When I think about our business and the people who take our medicines, making sure we understand what it is that they need helps us design better medicines. When we think about our employees, what do they need to be most successful in performing the work? And hearing how do we need to change the way we operate in order for them to be more successful. So I think really that outward focus of looking at what it is that somebody needs in order to be successful is a way to affect a positive work environment, enable our employees, deliver better on our business for the people who take our medicines. So I guess that's the thing that I would advise.
So start from with the people.
Start with the need.
With the need.
Of the people. And then work to make them successful.
Great. That's a great tip to end this podcast. Thank you so much, Deborah.
Thank you.
For the people at home, thank you so much for watching. Thank you so much for listening. This was 16 Minutes of Care. Take care.
Want to create lasting impact with your brand while feeding sustainable growth? Check out thecareprinciples.com and see how we can help you. 16 Minutes of Care is an independent production from Isabel Verstraeten, brand strategist, founder of The Care Principles, and author of the book, Does Your Brand Care? Help us reach more companies who are looking for caring and sustainable growth by giving this podcast all the stars it deserves and by sharing it in your network. Thank you and take care.